This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's a numbers game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. That's Kelly Bidlin. Appreciate you hanging out with us here. SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States. God bless America. Fun show on tap today as we're monitoring the MLB trade deadline. We'll have plays coming up on the Friday card of action as well. And right now I'm looking forward to this next conversation because this guy's been a fixture on my television for a long time. He does an awesome job on ESPN breaking down college football. And I think that his alma mater, BYU, has a chance to make a very fascinating run this year. We're going to chat now with Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst. At T Maddich on X is where you can find him on social media. And he joins us now via the Progressive Guest Line. So, Trevor, let's start with BYU. You won a national championship in 1984 with the Cougs. This year, I love what they have returning back, specifically Kalani Sitake. He thought about maybe leaving for Penn State. He remains there in Provo. Bear Bachmeyer returns for a second year. LJ Martin is back at running back. They're the second shot on the board to win the Big 12 behind Texas Tech. How good do you think BYU can be this year?
BYU can be a top 10 team and better this year, Dustin, because of the guys that are coming back that you mentioned, but also because their offensive line and defensive line will probably be better this year than they were last year. I mean, they've got great experience. They've got some high potential transfers coming in on the O-line and some young edge rushers that showed promise last year seem to be ready to break out on the defensive side. And that's huge. But you mentioned Bear Bachmeyer, the quarterback. I think everybody's focused there. And Bear last year was thrust into the starting job because BYU's senior starting quarterback had to leave school, had to leave campus. So Bear jumped in and had a great freshman year. And if you look at how he did against Texas Tech in two games, they lost twice to Texas Tech. The first one, Texas Tech was by far the better team. Bear was sort of overwhelmed. But in the Big 12 championship game, BYU came out, got the ball, drove it down for a quick touchdown early in the game. Bear looked like he was a different quarterback against that Texas Tech defense. But Bear hurt his ankle on that drive. And for the rest of the game, he could not use his mobility. He turned into a stationary pocket passer, which plays into the strength of that pass rush of Texas Tech last year. So this year, with Bear knowing more of the playbook, Bear being more experienced, and with some really interesting pieces around him, BYU's got a chance not just to get to the Big 12 championship game, but to compete with Texas Tech should they get there as well, and possibly win it. This is a very good BYU team with a tremendous amount of potential. Having said that, there are some really scary landmine-type games, track games, that BYU will have. But when you talk about the playoff, take a look at that Notre Dame game in October. Yeah, because if BYU loses, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, sorry, go ahead, Trevor, finish your thought.
If BYU loses to Notre Dame, then they really have to win the Big 12 in order to make the playoff. Otherwise, the loss of the Big 12 championship game would give them a second loss. And last year, they didn't make the playoff with just two losses. So if they beat Notre Dame, it gives them a mulligan, and they could still not win the Big 12 and make the playoff.
Sorry about that, Trevor. We're just getting too excited about Bear Bachmeyer over on this desk, okay? I wanted to kind of take a step back and just talk about the Heisman race potentially this season. And I know Dustin's high on him. He's got me high on him a bit, too. Do you think Bear Bachmeyer is going to be able to compete in that race down the stretch?
Yeah, I think so, Kelly. When you look at BYU's Heisman-winning quarterback, Ty Detmer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Miami, came to Provo that year. And Ty Detmer sliced them up. I mean, sliced them up. And BYU beat Miami. And that's what propelled Ty to the Heisman Trophy. And Bear has the same opportunity here. You know, he has to play well in a loss, maybe. he'll be in the race kind of thing. But if he plays well in a BYU win over Notre Dame, and then the rest of the season goes the way they want, I think he's got a very good chance to at least be in New York, especially because last year he got so much name recognition out there. I mean, he starts as one of the more recognized returning quarterbacks in college football because of his 2025 season.
ESPN college football analyst Trevor Maddich is our guest, Progressive Guest Line. Yesterday, I'm sure you saw it, Trevor, Kurt Cignetti called out the SEC. And you know what? He has every right to do so. The Big Ten's won three straight national champions. He put his money where his mouth was a year ago. He delivered one to Bloomington. When you watch Big Ten football versus SEC football in today's college football landscape, what do you think is the difference? Why has the Big Ten been successful the last 3 years and the SEC is now looking like the underdog in this spot?
Yeah, I think that NIL has spread recruiting around, which is another reason why I think 2014 playoff is not as preposterous as some people might think, because NIL means that lots of teams have really good players. And the SEC saw itself as the greatest conference because they kept on winning national championships with multiple teams. And now, as you guys know, the Big Ten won three straight with three different teams, including last year with Indiana, the losingest program in the history of college football, won the national championship out of the Big Ten. And a lot of people think Oregon might do it this year. So you start there. But then when you look at the depth of the league, the SEC still says now, to try to retain a little swagger, that, okay, the Big Ten is better at the top right now, but we're better in the middle and we're deeper. But Tony Patini, the Big Ten commissioner, points out that in the last 2 years of the 12-team playoff, the Big Ten has 11 different playoff wins by seven different teams, and that's more than double what the SEC has. And so, and they've got four straight playoff wins against the SEC. So, you know, the Big Ten is not just a couple good teams on top. And one of the great storylines this year is, what will the SEC do to reclaim the crown as the kings of college football? Because right now it is unquestioned that the Big Ten is the king and the SEC is far on the outside looking in.
Trevor, of the top of that Big Ten, who do you believe is the best chance to win the national title? The betting odds have Ohio State as the favorite in the market right now. Overall, it's 6-1. Indiana to repeat is 8-1. Oregon's 8-1. Which of those big three are your favorite?
You know, right now, I like Oregon. And the reason is that they've got a quarterback that has a chance to be elite at the top. Last year, Julian Sain, Ohio State's quarterback, first year as a starter, they protected him, and that was fine when they played teams they could beat up. But when they played Indiana in the Big Ten championship game and, you know, against better teams, they couldn't afford to bubble wrap him like they did. So we don't know how Julian Sain will be when they take the bubble wrap off. I think he'll be a really good quarterback, but we know, well, and then there's Josh Hoover at Indiana, who very quietly has the most returning passing yards career of any returning quarterback in college football. I mean, he has a chance to do everything that Fernando Mendoza did last year from the standpoint of moving the offense and winning. But Dante Moore, the quarterback for Oregon, if he'd have come out last year, would have been a top three pick. And as we sit here today, is the consensus QB1 in the 2027 draft. Now we'll see what happens when the season plays out. But he's got a chance to be the most elite of elite quarterbacks this year. And when you combine Oregon's lines, especially their defensive line, which this year is what Ohio State's was last year, lost a lot of those guys to the NFL, the Buckeyes did. I think Oregon is the team that I would pick.
Trevor Maddich is our guest, ESPN college football analyst. About 2 minutes to go here, Trevor. What do you make of year one of Lane Kiffin? 59 new players at Baton Rouge. Expectations are high. Win total is high at 8.5. Do you believe LSU can get a playoff spot this season?
I think they can. Lane Kiffin, for all of his bluster, is one of the best college football minds of his generation. And he's just fantastic at bringing in all those new guys, transfers, putting them into a locker room and molding them into a team with chemistry. And very few coaches really can do that well. And, you know, and the team chemistry is very important. Lane can do that. But to me, it's all about quarterback Sam Leavitt. Will he be healthy? And then how will he play? At Arizona State, where he transferred to LSU from, he had some really great moments, but he had some pretty average moments too. And he struggled to stay healthy in the Big 12. Well, now he has to stay healthy in the SEC. And it's hard to imagine that he'll be any better than the fifth best quarterback in the SEC, given what's coming back in that conference. And so it's really, there's a lot of pressure on Sam Leavitt, their transfer quarterback. If he plays at a high level, LSU has the ability to make the playoff.
Trevor, I'm already anticipating you being heavily on one of my four TVs as I'm watching college football, listening on ESPN as well. He's Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst at T Maddich on X is where you can find him. Thank you for doing this today. I really appreciated the conversation and the time, and good luck getting ready, because the season's going to be here before we know it.
Appreciate that. Thanks, Dustin. Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, Trevor.
Awesome stuff from Trevor Maddich there. I'm high on BYU, 5.5-1 to win the Big 12. I'd also tell you, I think I'm going to be on Houston to win the Big 12 at 16-1.
It is still mind-blowing to me that we're talking about a just world that we live in where Dante Moore skipped the draft last year.
No, he didn't skip the draft. Let's rephrase that. Dante Moore refused to be a New York Jet. He didn't skip the draft. He didn't want to be a New York Jet. He was willing to go into the draft. He just wasn't willing to play for the Jets.
Fair.
And the sports calendar never stops. The Sharp Plays, they cover it all. They've been winning for 15 straight years, all of it documented. Logs posted publicly, sharpplays.com. When the Sharp Plays moves, the sportsbooks take notice. Advanced AI, trusted insider intel. They find value before the numbers shift. Respected, watched, feared. Start winning with them at sharpplays.com today. Who will win the Tarek Skubal sweepstakes? We break it down on the other side of a numbers game.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's a numbers game. Dustin Sweetelson in for Gil Alexander. Don't worry, you'll hear from old Gilly coming up here in 30 minutes on the program. On the heels of cashing most wins in the month of July, 80-1 on the Boston Red Sox. I mean, that's bet of the year. For some people, that's bet of their life. I wonder where it's for Gil Alexander, who's been in this racket for a long time. I'm not calling him old. I'm just saying he's been betting a long time. Where does an 80-1 come down for him? For me, my biggest hit ever, and it wasn't the most money, but it was the biggest odds. I hit Paul Goldschmidt, NL MVP, a few years ago at 75-1. That was the biggest just individual bet I ever cashed at a big number. But for Gil, I wonder where 80-1 would rank for him.
He had a 100-1 Ole Miss College World Series a couple years ago.
And that cash?
Yeah, right. So that one's...
That's a fun one.
Yeah, that one. I don't think this one's as big as that, but it's up there. It's up there.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what he does for the next month in baseball because...
Yeah, can you hear me?
One element for me when it comes to looking at the month of August is I have to eliminate the teams that I believe... And guys, we can hear that. I can hear that in my ear. One thing for me when I was looking at the market was I want to get rid of teams, put a line through the ones that are going to be sellers at the deadline. So they're done. If they beat me, they beat me. But the Angels, like all these bad teams that are just going to get worse, the Mets who are going to get worse.
The Mets you're not looking at.
So I just didn't want to mess with them. So I'm looking at teams I think are trying to get better, that could play better, that might be worth the value. I had two teams that jumped out to me on that board. To help us analyze the baseball trade deadline, we are going to go out to the Progressive guest line. Welcome in Pat Ragazzo, Athlon Sports National MLB writer. You can check him out here as he joins us on the Progressive guest line. Pat, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate the time. And obviously, Tarek Skubal is the one that looms over this deadline on Monday. When you look at the fits for Skubal, they all make sense. But who do you anticipate to be the most aggressive in getting a guy that's going to be a rental, but also could propel you to winning a World Series?
I mean, there's a number of teams who are interested in Tarek Skubal. You look at the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are clearly the favorite right now. But then the Milwaukee Brewers, the Tampa Bay Rays, who just had an injury to Shane McClanahan, the Chicago Cubs, who desperately need starting pitching given all the injuries they've had this year. And there's just so many teams that really are fit for Skubal and are going to be in on him. Even the New York Yankees are a team that could possibly be in on him at this deadline. So I still think he's going to go to the Dodgers, but there's a number of teams who are going to have to give up a boatload of prospects in order to get him. And I think the Tigers would be crazy not to trade him at this deadline.
Yeah, Pat, it's been a lot of Skubal and Mason Miller talk here over the past couple weeks. Some other big names or bigger names that people should be looking out for here over the next few days to possibly be on the move?
Well, we've heard names like CJ Abrams and Mason Miller, and from my understanding, both players are not going to be dealt. So it's going to be more of a modest trade deadline. When you look at, particularly looking at pitching, where beyond Skubal, you have names like Kevin Gausman and Freddie Peralta and Clay Holmes and Robbie Ray. And then on the position player side, there's so many teams searching for right-handed hitting outfielder, right-handed bat in the infield, catching help. And guys like Shea Langeliers, Adley Rutschman, like those are the top two catching options who are most likely not going to be dealt. Shea Langeliers tore meniscus, so he's out for the year, so he's definitely not going to be dealt. The Orioles are in the wild card race right now, and obviously they have Rutschman, as I just mentioned, and Taylor Ward, who is another attractive right-handed hitting bat, but the Orioles are in the wild card race, so I think if this is going to come down to the wire in terms of names that are going to be dealt. I don't think too big of names beyond Skubal are going to be dealt this year, but things could obviously change as we get closer to the deadline on Monday.
Pat Ragazzo is our guest, MLB writer, Athlon Sports, at Ragazzo Report. You can find him over on X. Talk about teams that could be most aggressive as the Monday deadline approaches. Do you anticipate the Phillies making multiple moves, Milwaukee making just one or multiple moves here? Who do you anticipate being the teams that are most active as the deadline approaches?
I believe the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to be the two most aggressive teams. The Red Sox came back from the dead this year and won 15 straight. They've been, I believe they're 27-8 since June. And they have a real shot to make some noise in a weak American League this year. And they could potentially surpass the Yankees, who are struggling immensely on offense without Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and Cody Bellinger. So I think both of those AL East teams need to be super aggressive. The Yankees, the question is whether Judge is going to come back this year. I think they still expect him to come back in September, but he's really not making too much progress with that broken rib right now. And the Yankees need to go out and get multiple bats. I know that the Yankees are looking at relief help as well, but their bullpen has been the best in the league since June. July, they had a tremendous month, and they're really much, they're pretty much set in the starting rotation as well, as long as Carlos Rodon comes back from the IL, which is expected. That the Yankees need to get multiple bats. The Red Sox already got Curtis Meade for Connelly early, but they need another bat after Curtis Meade broke his wrist after getting hit by a pitch. Red Sox could probably use some more pitching around the margins, but I think those two teams are going to be the most aggressive. And the Milwaukee Brewers, which of course you asked about, I think they need to make multiple trades as well. And this needs to be the year that they put all their chips on the table and go all in and make some moves that could help them take down the Dodgers.
Well, that's where I wanted to go next here, Pat. Is this all just a waste of time that the Dodgers are inevitable? They're +190 to win the World Series. Do you believe any of the teams looking to punch up at Los Angeles going for their three-peat can get that much better where they could potentially knock them off?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think that the Brewers have Jacob Mizorowski. They have Kyle Harrison. They have a great pesky offense that scores a lot of runs, has speed on the base pass. They play great defense. Like, I think that the Brewers have been neck and neck with the Dodgers all season long. And this has to be the year that they get over the hump, and they they could do so by making significant trades at the deadline, particularly in the pitching department. And they could use a power bat as well, which I think every contender could use a right-handed hitting power bat and is looking for one. But like I said, the market for that is just not great right now. But maybe some teams could surprise us as the deadline gets closer. But I think the Brewers have a chance of taking the Dodgers down if they make the right moves. Potentially the Phillies, even though their offense is really struggling right now, and they need some pitching help in the bullpen and in the back end of their starting rotation. And in the American League, maybe the Rays. If the Rays go out and get Tarek Skubal over the Dodgers, which is more of a reason that the Dodgers are going to try and get Skubal so their rivals don't. I think would be another big reason that they try and get Tarek Skubal. The Rays could make the right moves and potentially wind up beating the Dodgers in the World Series if they make it out of the AL.
Yeah, we've got the AL Central then in the AL West, Pat. Man, what messes out there? How do you see these divisions ended up shaking out? Who do you think comes out on top?
Well, in the AL Central, I like the Chicago White Sox. I think that they have some really good young talent. They've been heavy in on starting pitching at the deadline, which they need to shore up their rotation. They could probably use another bat as well to complement their offense, but and some bullpen help as well. But I like what the Chicago White Sox have done this year. It's pretty remarkable given they lost 121 games just 2 years ago. And I believe they had three straight 100 loss seasons the last 3 years as well. And they've recuperated young talent and developed them well. And guys have been showing out this year. Murakami at first base, I'm not even going to try and pronounce his first name, unfortunately. He's had a great year as well, coming from Japan. A number of teams swung and missed trying to sign him, and he signed for a very reasonable deal with the White Sox. So I do like the White Sox coming out of the AL Central. And then in the American League West, I think the Rangers, I like the trade that the Rangers just made for Logan O'Hop and Chase Silseth from the Los Angeles Angels the other night. That was really the first trade that we saw at the deadline. And I like the Rangers taking that division. I think the Mariners have really struggled. We've seen them in the series against the Dodgers this week where they haven't really played well, and they haven't really played well as of late overall. I don't think the Astros are making the postseason this year, even though they do intend to be buyers. But I think the Rangers are going to improve a little more as well, and I think they're going to wind up taking that division in a tight race.
Pat, I appreciate you doing this today, man. Awesome stuff. Everyone read him over at Athlon Sports on X, at Ragazzo Report. He's Pat Ragazzo, MLB writer nationally for Athlon Sports. Thanks for the time, man.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, the Skubal thing, the Brewers being aggressive. I keep living in a world now where I'm trying to convince myself of my Phillies bets.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm high on the Phillies, and since I did that, they got swept by the Marlins. Like, they've been embarrassing.
It's been bad.
I've got to make the playoffs with that.
No, they're going to make the playoffs.
I'm feeling okay. I don't have a high end as you.
But if they wind up and their consolation prize, if they don't pay the price for Skubal, is, I don't know, getting a bullpen arm, maybe one of the guys from the Mets, maybe it's Raley, maybe it's Devin Williams, Luke Weir, who knows what it could be. One of the relievers out there to get better there. But couldn't they theoretically get Gausman and Reed Detmers and just go all in on the arms and not have to pay that? I don't think Philly's totally dead because the handicap was always pitching, but Bryce Harper calling out the front office was certainly a choice by him. So,
yeah. Hey, light a fire.
Speaking of choices, who are the best choices for MVP? Kelly found some interesting trends. We'll share them next on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy Friday, boys and girls. Shout out to Rebecca Black, somewhere doing her thing. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Got to get down on Friday. Everyone knows that.
You think that song will ever get out of your head?
No.
Like, it will forever be lodged in some part of my brain.
I'm going to tell you something.
And, like, shout out to her for that, I guess. Well,
first of all, I believe the story goes, and I'm probably getting all of this wrong. This is, like, one of those things that's passed down.
What, she, like, ripped off the song from someone who ripped off the song?
No, her parents want her to be famous. So they bought, you know, they go to a production company, they buy it to, like, some song that's going to go off that's kind of stupid and catchy, and, like, thinking that the career's just going to take off from there.
Yeah.
And I mean, the song did. It slapped, and then everyone was like, "Never play it again." Rebecca Black. Is it just called Friday?
I think
Friday,
so.
Friday, gotta get down on Friday.
If it's not called
Everybody's
Friday, they kind of botched
for
that
the
part.
Weekend.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Fun fact that when I was in Los Angeles, I didn't hang out with this group of people. I was like, I was on the outside of a group that hung out with this group that hung out with her. So I was at a party in the Hollywood Hills when I lived in Los Angeles once.
All right, Dustin, just to catch everybody up, Dustin, best friends with Rebecca Black, at a party in Hollywood Hills with her. Yep, okay, go on.
I'm like Steven Glansberg, just sitting in the corner. You got that reference. I'm just sitting there in the corner with like a six-pack of beer, not talking to anyone, because like my thing would be like, all right, I'm social, man. I'm out in front of people, but actually interacting with them is not something I'm looking forward to. And I'm sitting by the bathroom, and I saw Rebecca Black go in and out of the bathroom. So I was like, that was Rebecca Black. And I was like, oh, yeah, it was. Good for her.
Oh, yeah?
Years later, though, obviously.
In and out of the bathroom? She was partying in there, you think?
No, I'm not going to say what she was up to in there. I don't judge. That's
great
cool,
reference,
man.
By the way. That is maybe the best scene of that movie.
Steven Glansberg?
I love
that line. Is he eating yogurt by himself?
Banana
or yogurt?
I think it was banana. Just looking off into the distance.
See, I stand by bananas are a very difficult food to eat in public, specifically at work. Is it an HR violation if you eat a banana in front of a coworker? And the only way I've decided it is if you make eye contact while you're biting the banana.
Yeah, it's probably a good call. What, are you going to just leave me here by myself like I'm Steven Glansberg?
It just shows him eating lunch. See, my favorite line that I use all the time, and I don't know if people know that, by the movie's super bad.
Oh, man.
It's basically my autobiography.
You know what will blow your mind? You've probably seen this on Instagram already. You know it came out the exact same month as the first iPhone?
Super bad?
Yeah.
Well, think about this. How many movies the plot gets completely derailed
exactly
because a smartphone's out?
That's maybe the best movie example. If you're like, this doesn't make any sense if these guys have cell phones.
I always think of Reservoir Dogs. I'm like, they'd all be alive if they just had cell phones and a way to communicate. I don't know why that's the I remember watching that movie because I didn't see it until like, I don't know, 15 years ago. And the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, if they just had a cell phone, all of this is avoided, and they live.
That movie is tough to do if they have cell phones.
The line from Superbad I use all the time is when they're in home ec, and Jonah Hill's character's like, because he's like, I'm by myself. He's like, I'm like a single mother. Right. I'm washing and drying the dishes.
Washing and drying.
All right, We get tweets.
I got it right.
I woke up this morning, and I saw the tweet from Buddhist Man, and I was like, this is brilliant. All right, Gil, and he's quoting me. Gil, and I need a one-word answer, which is definitely the way I would phrase it. Who has the most wins in August for Major League Baseball? Washington Nationals. Ooh. from Gil, which, by the way, is two words. The reaction from that, according to Buddhist Man, would be Chris Felica saying, generational thing. Drew Dinsick would reply with, oh, man. And then this is my favorite part about the tweet. Matt Grissom would chime in and say, Georgia Tech.
No. You're reading into this wrong. So this was a real exchange.
Stop.
That occurred with Gil and Matt Grissom.
Oh.
In college baseball. It was like on our way out. Right? We were like hitting the break, right? And Gil's like, hey, I need one word answer. Who wins the College World Series? And Matt Grissom goes, Georgia Tech. Gil goes, I said one word. He goes, Georgia.
That's well done. That's well done.
Good.
Let's see. Bye week picks. Even though beating the book is off, do we have an August highest win total for MLB, Kelly Bidlin? We will get Gil's thoughts coming up in 11 minutes on the show.
That's right.
Fresh off the heels of 80-1 delivering on the Boston Red Sox. Ted Hoyer writes you, Kelly, why can't I quit Jake Knapp? All he does is hurt me. Where are you at with the Rocket Classic? What's it called?
Yeah, Rocket Classic.
Where are you at,
buddy,
right now with the
No
event?
Rocket Mortgage Classic? Jake Knapp struggling. I've gotten a few tweets about him, actually. Didn't end up betting him. He's 200 par. I think he actually just made an eagle. 200 par for the tournament. Not looking good. Projected cut line is 200 par right now, but we only have the morning wave currently out there. Cameron Young, Patrick Cantlay, and Peter Malnati are all tied for the lead at the Rocket Classic at 9 par. Cantlay with a birdie putt here on the fourth hole. He is 9 under. Cameron Young, though, probably the story of the day. 8 under through 14 on his round. He's the low man out there. You've got Matt Wallace and Luke Clanton, Florida State's Luke Clanton, 8 under par for the tournament, and then a bunch of guys at 7 under, but we have half the field that has not even teed off yet.
Who'd you say you have outright?
I have Hideki Matsuyama, who is, let's see, 3
under par. I just saw him on the screen not that long ago.
4 under par. So he's T31 right now. He's got some work to do. And then I have my other guys will be teeing off later today. Chris Goddard and Ben Griffin is out there right now. I do not know what he is doing.
Is Chris Goddard up?
Great.
Is Chris Goddard up the new Matt Fitzpatrick? You guys are just going to bet him every week?
Well, for me, like all season, it's been those two guys. It's just been like back and forth, like Goddard up, Matt Fitzpatrick. This week was actually a real pain because they did this is the last year of this event.
Yes.
They're shortening up the PGA Tour schedule going forward. So some of these events basically are either getting kicked out or got to choose whether they're staying or not. But, Dustin, you know how we do this. So we do long shots every week, and we talk the golf tournaments. And
yes,
they just did major renovations to this golf course.
Oh, great. So all that data is really
all of that research really and work that we had to do for 1 year, and then this will be done.
Incredible. I mean, we had a course record for the first round, right?
Yeah, we did.
Which is odd because the event's going to be going away now.
Yeah, a little easier, though, when you go from a par 72 to a par 70.
Fair.
Yeah,
fair. Mark Hoppel writes in, double time with Follow the Money 2. Dustin Sweetelson, could you imagine that? We should do that. I'm telling you, we should do 24 hours of Dustin on the network. God, subscriptions would be dropping left and right.
Oh, man.
That would be something here. All right, and I think, now people are writing in. They're not happy that we got that stuff.
Yeah, just Rebecca Black tweets now. Yep.
All right, let's see. NFL MVP, you sent over some interesting trends here. They're from Clev T.A. It's Clev T.A., right? I wish you're
Gil. Always go Cleve, but, you know.
It's Cleve. Hold on. I've heard Gil say Clev T.A. or Cleve T.A. I've heard people refer to it as Clevta. Do we have confirmation on how to pronounce it? Or are we all just guessing?
I'm pretty sure it's Cleve T.A.
That was not confident.
No, I'm trying not to be overly cocky, but I'm pretty sure.
Cleve T.A.?
Yeah.
I would just implore Cleve T.A.
Because you might notice he tweets a lot about Cleveland. He's from Cleveland. So that's like the first thing. And then T.A. stands for something.
Well, either way, he's great with trends. How about these NFL MVP trends, which I think help us whittle down who the best options are to win this award. So the first one here that you sent over, 13 straight and 18 of the last 19 MVPs have been quarterbacks, and those teams have averaged just over 13 wins per season. No MVP in the last 26 seasons came from a team with less than 11 wins.
Okay.
So when I'm looking at the teams, I need to have teams that I think are capable of 13.
Right. And that quarterback.
And will win 11.
Yep.
So when I look at that list, that brings it to like a very small group for me. I'm talking Baltimore, Buffalo, Chicago, Cincinnati. Would you put Detroit in this camp?
Yeah.
Dallas.
Yeah, with how everybody's betting on them this year. Dallas, you could definitely make the case.
Green Bay.
Of course, you could make the case.
Houston.
Yep.
And then my locks, Kansas City, Chargers, Rams, Eagles, Niners, and Seattle.
Man, okay, I guess I'd be a little bit more uncertain over some of your locks, but yeah, sure. If you're going to bet MVP at this point, yes. You can definitely see a path where those teams win that.
Less locks, but like winning 11 to 13, that's the expectation for these teams coming in. The second trend, since 2009, no quarterback has won MVP on a team worse than plus 315 to make the playoffs, which that certainly is the correct cutoff point when you look at the odds to make the playoffs. Because I can't remember who that first team is on the outside looking at, but they're definitely not a playoff team.
Yeah, it's the I don't think there's an overcomplicated trends, right? But this kind of gives you some guidelines, right? If you're going to bet MVP right now at this point in the year, you better make sure you think it's on a team that's going to play well, make the playoffs, right? And probably has pretty high expectations, and it's a quarterback.
Yeah,
it's the biggest thing.
It eliminates the Titans, the Browns, the Raiders, the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Cardinals. So of that first group I mentioned, teams that can get to 13 wins, Kelly, I'm eliminating Detroit because Jared Goff can't win MVP. I am
on the same page with you at this point.
I'm eliminating Houston because CJ Stroud is not an MVP. And also I think the offensive line is bad.
Yeah.
I am not willing to eliminate Dallas. I am going to eliminate Green Bay. Okay. So now, of the options, and we'll discuss this a little bit later on, our potential MVP bets in the NFL, Baltimore, Buffalo, so I should say the names, Lamar, Allen, Caleb Williams, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Matthew Stafford, Jalen Hurts, Brock Purdy, Sam Darnold, cross Sam Darnold.
Yeah, I think you crossed him off too.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. We're down to 9 guys that can win MVP. Who's the best bet? We'll dissect it later on in the program. But how does Gil Alexander top 80-1 on the most wins in July? Well, we'll get his bet on August next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
I think the boldest strategy for me here at Kelly Bidlin, I'm Dustin Sweetelson in for Gil Alexander, is I should read 400 tweets right now before we get to our next guest.
Oh, my God, I already forgot to make that joke. Yeah.
So just payback. Let him see how it feels on the other end of this thing. But look, when you're sitting in the chair for someone as Gil Alexander is in the betting landscape here at VSiN as one of the forefathers of the network, you have to make way when he says, hey, I know I'm on vacation, but I'd like to appear on my own show. You just lay out the red carpet. So joining us from parts unknown in the state of California is the normal host of this program, A Numbers Game. He is Gil Alexander, and he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Now, a couple things we have to discuss here, Gil, as it's probably weird to be interviewed on your own show. You're on the heels of cashing 80-1, the Boston Red Sox, to win the most wins in the month of July. I'm just curious, before we look back on that bet, have you ever had a long shot this long and this easy get home for you?
The short answer to that, Dustin, first of all, thanks for having me on this fine program.
Yeah, this is weird to listen. This is really weird to listen to. Really weird.
And by the way, one correction. I did not ask to be on the show. I was asked.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, we need God's it anyway. Sake.
No, there's never been. I mean, first of all, it's the shortest month, right? Besides March and October. It's the shortest month because there's an all-star break. And if you look at those standings, they have cleared the field by 5 wins. Like, it's just insane how this worked out as beautifully as it did. In fact, if they win tonight against the Dodgers here July 31st, I think, and Major League Baseball doesn't do a good job of tracking this calendar months, but I think it's like the 11th, tied for the 11th best month, with the exception of March and October, 11th best month in the history of baseball.
Well, with that in mind, let's start looking ahead to where you're at for the month of August, because the odds are up. They're available. Dodgers, the favorite, 6-1. We have the Rangers, 9-1. The Brewers, also 9-1. Philadelphia, 9.5-1. Then we get 10-1 or longer. Where's the brain start percolating when you look at some of these teams?
Well, the biggest discussion for August, as we sort of alluded to off air, is the trade deadline is upon us, right? August 3rd. So even though it's pushed back a few days, this becomes the biggest part, or maybe one of the biggest parts, if not the biggest part of the calculus here, because you have to sort of figure out, or at least you have to, you know, weigh, okay, this team is likely to do this, this team is likely to do the opposite, what's going to happen, who's going to get this guy, who's going to trade this guy. And so it becomes this much, you know, harder sort of thing, because there is this one hurdle you have to go. Now, as we go through this, you'll find that I sort of went contrarian on this. But that's the biggest thing, Dustin and Kelly, because mm-hmm. you just don't know where the chips will fall 3 days from now.
Yeah, it kind of makes it a team-by-team basis for sure. So, Gil, we're just going to tee this up like usual, man. We'll start running through it, and you start running through the whole process, and we'll start like you always do with kind of total games that these teams are going to play.
Yeah, and by the way, shout out again to the tweeter who, after the first day of July, said, oh, after the Red Sox lost by 8 runs, oh, Gil's off to a blazing start in July. So please, after we lose the first game here in September, if you could do this.
It's a long month. Long month.
It's a long month. August. So the first thing we go through every month is just the total number of games that every team plays. And the reason we do that is because there are different rules, right? William Hill Caesars, they have a dead heat tiebreaker. So if you end up with the same number of wins at the top, at the end of the month, well, it's a dead heat. No one likes a dead heat. At Circa, they have a tiebreak system. First tiebreaker would be fewest losses if the teams are tied atop with the most wins. The second tiebreaker is the best run differential. Obviously, that didn't come into play in July. August, and remember when we went through this in July, you'd think it would have been the most mashed up in terms of, like, you know, top to bottom number of games because it's a shorter month with an all-star break. It wasn't. It was from 28 games all the way down to 23. So at least it gives you some context. Hey, maybe don't pick the 23s, even though at circa that might not be the worst thing in the world with the tiebreakers. Mm-hmm. August, you look at it, 29, 28, 27, and 26. The Guardians play the fewest games. Again, at William Hill Caesars, that's probably a detriment for them. It is a detriment by having less opportunities to win. At circa, it might not be the worst thing in the world, fewer opportunities to lose. But there you see the 29-game teams, Boston, Washington, Milwaukee, Cincinnati, Arizona, and it cascades down from there. So that's kind of the first filter I look through. And then I just sort of narrow it down to here are the possibilities and here's who I end up going with. So in third place, this is how we do it every month.
Yep.
The team that ended up being my third choice is, and it's not a bet, but it was the Houston Astros. Houston Astros 28-1. They've got a pretty freaking easy schedule. And what I've done here for each of these teams, you see their odds at the top 28-1. That's the William Hill Caesars odds. Circa just put out theirs here in the last 24 hours. The actual record of the Houston Astros, 55-55. And what their record really is based on Pythagorean theorem, which is simply the Bill James formula of runs produced, runs allowed, and also base runs at Fangraphs, which is more of a sequencing thing. And you can be fortunate or unfortunate offensively, defensively. That's really more of a window into what their record should be. So you see, the Astros aren't really a 500 team. They're actually playing worse than that. But it is an easy schedule. Ultimately, it was them being worse than 500 by several games. And the fact that I just simply don't trust this baseball team top to bottom, I did not end up going with them, though they were a consideration. Dustin, I know you said you thought about them.
That's the one that I'm really considering. So now I'm fascinated to hear who beat them. Who are the two teams above it? Who's number two?
Well, number two ended up being the Chicago Cubs. Now, Chicago Cubs at 18-1, they were my team in June.
I like that.
And I got kind of ridiculed for that when I made that pick. Some people are like, I was with you till you got to the Cubs this month. And the Cubs ended up going 16-10. If it weren't for that Marlins ridiculous 20-6 month of July, and we see what the Marlins have done since then, that would have been in play. The Cubs, just, you know, the quintessential team that played really poorly in March and April and in May, and then really sort of their skill set really started to manifest in the month of June. I love them here. And if I could tell you guys, if I could tell you that Tarek Skubal was going to end up with Chicago, this would have absolutely been a bet. Of course, I can't know that. Mm. So in the end, it was close, but no cigar on the Cubs, who are exactly, by the way, about what they should be. Their actual record is really a reflection of where they should be in the standings. They are what they are cracked up to be.
I like where your head's at with the Cubs, because even if they don't get Skubal, what if they get Detmers or Gausman or maybe two of them? They should be better in the next few days here. All right, this is the big unveil on the heels of 80-1. Kelly, what do you want to
say? No, it's just good. The other one that jumps out to me on this one, Gil, on the Cubs real quick before we move on is, you know, we check in all month long on the live odds for the month. This could be a Cubs team that you leave circled. Maybe you get through the series with the Yankees and the Dodgers and then reevaluate where this team's at.
100%. As we do with NFL season win totals, adjusted season win totals, or anything like that. The pick and the bet for the month of August for me was, and this is contrarian, the Detroit Tigers at 60-1. 60-1. I think they are now fit. They went from 50-1 to 60-1, back to 50-1 now at William Hill Caesars. I think they opened, or last night, the only thing I saw it at Circa was 40-1. Those are playable as well. I got them at 60-1. Yes, it appears, and Jeff Passan is absolutely adamant about this, they will trade Tarek Skubal. And quite frankly, it would be sort of irresponsible of them not to. Now, there is a world where they don't. Let's say they don't get the offer they want, and Detroit sweeps the A's here in the next few days, and they get off to a 2-0 start in the month. Maybe they reconsider. But most likely, they trade Tarek Skubal. Now, here's the thing. So people, the reason that it went from 50-1 to 60-1 and was drifting and is still hovering in that area is because of that specifically. But the Detroit Tigers have been the fifth best team in Major League Baseball since the beginning of June. Skubal had something to do with that, absolutely. But they've also been the fifth best team in they're the fifth best team in expected weighted on base. That's offensively. That has nothing to do with Skubal. And remember 2 years ago, Paul Sporer and I talked about this the other day. 2 years ago, right around this time, it was actually 2 years ago to the day yesterday, the Detroit Tigers traded Jack Flaherty to the Los Angeles Dodgers. And it was one of those things where they were selling. They were just giving up on the season. And a funny thing happened. They ended up making the playoffs anyway, unintentionally. They actually won a playoff series against the Houston Astros, I believe the best of three, then lost to the Guardians subsequently. But that was sort of a, oh, what an accident. We still ended up making the playoffs. Baseball's a funny sport. So I think even if the Tigers do responsibly trade Tarik Skubal rather than get left holding the bag on him at the end of the season, where they won't get nearly the same kind of compensation, the Tigers, I think, are going to thread the needle here, trade Skubal, and unlike 2 years ago, still have designs on making a postseason with a team that once again has been the fifth best in baseball since the beginning of June and is fifth in expected weighted on base. The Detroit Tigers, 60-1, guys, is the pick for August. Most wins.
I like this for many reasons. We will discuss that when we come back. He's Gil Alexander, 60-1, the Tigers. Most wins in the month of August. Enjoy the rest of your vacation, my friend.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, more on that and why that makes a lot of sense when we return on A Numbers Game.